peeps. Welcome back to Workday Playdate with Improve It. I am Erin Deal, your Workday Wing Woman. And this month on the show, we are talking all about vision setting. It's the big, what do you want for your year, your team, your life vibes. But here's the thing. If you're sitting there thinking your vision has to look like a Pinterest board that came to life, we're about to smash that thought into a million little glitter pieces. Because perfect visions, perfect goals, and perfect leaders, snooze. That was a snort snooze. Today, we are talking about why it's actually the imperfect leaders, the ones who stumble, trip, spill the coffee, admit they don't know everything, who make the biggest difference. And I've got the best guest to prove it, Neil Ghosh. Now, Neil is not just a thought leader. He is a doer of more good. Literally, he wrote the book, Do More Good, with a foreword by the Dalai Lama. Just casual, right? Now, he spent 30 years across nonprofits, government, philanthropy, and the private sector, helping leaders shake things up and create real impact. He runs MGR Professional Services and writes this rad Building Bridges column about unity and empathy. Basically, he's seen it all, done it all, and lived to tell the story. So let's get real for a second. So many leaders think they have to be perfect. Like, you have to have the answer to everything. You have to never screw up. You have to never show a single crack. But you know what happens then? Their teams freeze. Nobody takes risks. Everyone's terrified to make a mistake because their leader looks like they eat mistakes for breakfast. And you know what that creates? A boring, fear-filled workplace, and ain't nobody got time for that. We are going to talk all about doing good on this show because here's the mic drop moment, peeps. Imperfection is the secret sauce. Studies show that when leaders admit mistakes, team trust goes up by 76%. Thank you, Harvard Business Review. People relax, they get bold, they take chances. Because here's the real truth. Perfection is intimidating, but imperfection is relatable. We don't grow when we're polished and flawless. We grow when we mess up, we laugh, we learn, and we keep moving. So here's what Neil and I dig into today. And I want to tell you that the beginning of this episode with Neil is going to get you set up into what Neil does and how he's doing more good in this world and how you can too. And then we talk about imperfection at the end. And I think what I want to frame this conversation for you as it's a crash course, is here's how you can do more good. And if you mess up along the way, or you don't do it perfectly, or don't know where to start, it's okay. The messy missile is where messy middle is where we learn the most. So without further ado, let's get into today's Playdate with Neil Ghosh. Okay, Neil Ghosh, I am so excited to have this playdate with you. Welcome to Workday Playdate. Thanks for getting in the sandbox. I'm so thrilled to have you here. So, okay, we always start the show by setting an intention for our time together. So if you had one word, and knowing that the theme of the show this month is vision setting, if you had one word to give or to receive or just embody in this conversation, what would that one word be?
Purpose-driven life.
I love it. And you've had a purpose-driven life. I mean, we're going to get into this. When I was researching you, I was like, okay, and I started with this when we first even hit, before we hit record today. Your book, the foreword was written by the Dalai Lama. Can we start here, Neil? Like, how did that take place? Who did you have to call? What? Talk to me about this.
Yeah. I'll be delighted to see. Absolutely. No question. It is, obviously. And I will add something. It just will be, I think, fun for your listener to enjoy this piece of the conversation. I was actually in Istanbul, Turkey in 2024, last year, December 25th. Birth of Christ. And I was, it just coincidentally also visiting one of the museum there where I saw relics of Prophet Muhammad. So here is a birth of Jesus Christ. I'm also visiting in Istanbul to found some relics of Moses and Prophet Muhammad. And I left the museum, walking towards my hotel, and my phone, there was a message. And the message was a letter signed by His Holiness Dalai Lama, December 25th, 2024. So I think that is a very special day. You know, it was just a particular day that made this thing more special. So yeah, we will get into that area, I think. But let me start by saying about, you know, why I was excited to come to this show. When I was researching you a little bit, and I kind of realized that, you know, both of us are trying to bring joy, and both of us are trying to value everyone in the whole spectrum of thing. And you try to do it by bringing joy and laughter and team building and all this other good stuff you do with organizations. I come from an angle of bringing purpose, empathy, and micro altruism. So that's kind of, so I was just, you know, joking with myself that, you know, Erin and I can solve most of America's problems. So on a serious note, you talked about the book. And the book, you know, the book, three pillars of the book is purpose, empathy, and action. That's the way I kind of structure the book. And you want me to talk about His Holiness. Before even I call anybody, I actually spent some time with him quite some time ago, almost 3 days, along with some other leaders of the world. 50 of us gathered with him in New Delhi. And I stayed in touch by many ways. So when I completed the manuscript, you know, just anything in life, you hope that they will get to him. You hope that he will read it. And you hope you will say a few words. And it happened. So I think he found the message that you and I are working on, of empathy, of compassion, of just simple, small things. Doesn't have to be grandeur action in life. And I think he... I will actually read a sentence that really resonated with me. And he said in the foreword, he said that, which I found it very, very, if I can find it. Yeah, I think he said that, I'm a strong believer in the power of positive role model. Every individual has a responsibility to help guide our global family in the right direction and has a potential to make a difference in society. And I think that's it's all about. That's what you're trying to do, and we are all trying to do. And our little action makes a big difference.
Neil, oh my gosh, I wanna talk about that too for a moment, because every individual does have that opportunity, and I feel like I'm leaning into this, Neil. I told you sometimes I have a script, and sometimes I go off script, and this is me just living on this script.
Don't worry. Go for it.
What I hear when he said that is something so beautiful. And I feel like something that a lot of people forget is that they have the opportunity to be that positive light. They don't have to look outside of themselves. They just have to turn in. And I would love your thoughts on this. I think just in my own life, every time that I've had a breakthrough in my life to heal some type of pattern or to get through something that I've needed to overcome, I've always had a breakdown. And recently, I've started working with this new coach. I'm doing some new things. And I realized, okay, I don't have to have a breakdown to break through. I just have to rise. I just have to rise. And if every human knew all they had to do to be the highest versions of themselves is just rise and meet where they already are and let go of doubt and fulfill that purpose that you're talking about, so that they could feel more empathy inwardly to give action and in love out to the world. Like, what a different space we would be in, right? So when you read that passage, what came to mind for you? That's what hit for me. But what comes to mind for you?
Yeah, I think, you know, what came to me, actually, it's an old Chinese wisdom. I think it's Chinese wisdom. I heard it many years ago. And I will elaborate on that. It goes like this. If you want to be happy for an hour, take a nap. If you want to be happy for a day, go fishing. If you want to be happy for a month, you know, win a lottery, inherit a fortune. But if you want to be happy for a lifetime, help someone. And it's kind of, you know, you kind of mentioned that. So, you know, if you extrapolate that, this old Chinese saying, in modern time, there are scientific proof by Harvard and many other institutions that doing good, what you just talked about, there's a psychological benefit, there is a neurological benefit in terms of our brain, there is physical health, there is longevity, there is social connection. So these things, sometimes I say it's okay to do this for a selfish reason, for my own well-being. The fact that I'm doing something for others is great. It feels good, but there are actually scientific proof by many research that doing good creates longevity, happiness, and a more peaceful life. So I think that's what came to my mind when I read those sentences by him.
I mean, how amazing. What was your reaction like when you got, like, I'm sure he emailed you back the foreword. What was your reaction like when you received it and you read those words?
No, it was, as I mentioned, that's the time I was telling the story. I was actually in Istanbul.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was really, you know, the coincidence of getting the whole message and sign on December 25th is kind of very, I don't know what's the exact word to use, was something very special.
Synergistic. Synergistic, I don't know.
And it was signed on December 25th, 2024. Actually, if you look at the book, the date is there. That's the day he signed. It is fascinating. Fascinating.
So, okay. I want to back up because I know we call our community the Peeps. So the Peeps community is probably even wondering what's the name of the book. Do More Good is the name of the book. I'm an author too. I always love this. I want to, and this again, Neil, I'm not even looking at my notes. I'm just feeling compelled to ask you these questions because I'm genuinely curious.
Sure.
How did you receive the download? I call it a download. How did you get a download to write Do Good? What brought you to this book?
I think it's a very relevant question, particularly given the topic. There are three answers I will give you just from my head. The first one, I would say most of us, if not all of us, are shaped by our childhood. It's just a fact of life. So what I've seen when I was very, very young, that the power of small action, very tiny action, and it's not 2 + 2 = 4, it's 2 + 2 = 10. I've seen it in my neighborhood, and I grew up in a, you know, I would say not too wealthy. I mean, we had, I always joke around, we had empathy before we had television, a gas stove. My mother used to cook using a device using cow dung and coal. So I think I saw empathy, power of empathy at a very early age. But then in my professional life, I traveled quite a bit. I traveled in East Africa, West Africa, Asia, Latin America, and of course across the United States. And, you know, many parts of the US are not as fortunate as we are. And a lot of people don't realize that. And I'll give you one data to ponder upon maybe some other time. Almost 45 million Americans, as we speak, you know, they are dependent on some kind of a food help from the government. So we have issues here as well, as much as in other countries. What I have seen, what I learned as a child, is the power of small action. So that stayed with me. The small action can create huge impact. And the third piece of this equation was, many people asked me, and these are across the board, they are not necessarily philanthropy, just people like another Neil, another Aaron. Neil, how can I help? What can I do to help? What is my role? What happens, Aaron, we are overwhelmed. We are constantly overwhelmed with everything, with our own life. We're worrying about my check, my paycheck, my retirement, my kids, my family, my health. So it's very hard to think about beyond that, and it's too complex. So when I wrote the book, I deliberately, after each chapter, I kind of listed names of organizations under each chapter. And my goal was that I didn't want to write a book to feel good and put it back again. So if anybody wants to take an action, whether you care about environment, whether you care about poverty, whether you care about motivate, you know, how to get better in life, there are organizations that you can join or you can support. So I want to make a book of action, not just, you know, read the book and feel good about. So I think those three, I would say, motivated me to share the stories that I learned from all these people. And as you saw, there are some famous people, well-known people, I would say, but some of them are not. Some of them are just regular people doing their, leading a regular life. So my thing was, how do I share their stories, what I learned that I benefited, and how can I share with the rest of the world? The book is now just not, will be now, of course, it came out in US, but now in Korea, it will come out in Turkey. That's a very interesting coincidence. And also in India. So I'm hoping other countries will slowly get to read it.
So amazing. So amazing. What's your hope with it? What do you hope people will do? It, of course, to take action in their own community. But let's say a peep is listening today and they're like, okay, I'm going to pick up a copy of this book. I'm going to pick up Do More Good. And after I read it, I'm going to do this. What do you hope that thing is?
We'll elaborate more, but I think I'll come back to this again. I'm a big believer that we're living in a time of great division and disruption and also digital overload. And irrespective of what politics you follow, it's a very dark feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So I think my question to everyone listening, to you or any other channel, do I want to live a proactive life or a reactive life? I refuse to live a reactive life. I will live a proactive life. So that's my number one. So what is proactive life means, right? What does that even mean? So my small answer to your question will be, no matter what you care about, we cannot solve all the issues in the world. Pick one. Just pick one and do something about it. And I'll give you a couple of examples to make a point. So there is actually, in the book, I talked about resources. There is a resource I provide called, there's an app called Five Calls. It's an app. You can press that app and your legislature will know exactly where you stand. You can be, you can be issue on this, on issue on that. It's not a whatever you believe in. Be an active citizen. Be an engaged citizen. So that is my hope, that take action. That's my, I can elaborate on that a lot more as we talk more. I created a formula called GEMSS. So if you want to elaborate on that, I will give you that also.
Yeah, give me GEMSS. GEMSS. Gem.
No, GEMSS, like gem, like, precious stone.
GEMSS, two S's. Gem with two S's. Okay, got
one extra
you.
S, yeah.
Got you. Tell me that.
I said G stands for get engaged.
Okay, yes.
Get engaged.
Not with a ring on your finger, to your local community or government.
That
yes.
is correct.
Yes.
That
okay.
is correct.
Yes.
And E stands for empower others. I'm a big into mentorship. I'm a product of mentorship. I learned a lot from so many people in the world, younger and older. So E is empower others, mentor others. M is micro philanthropy, which we talked about early part of the conversation. Micro altruism, micro philanthropy. When I go to a gas station and I put my 50 cents to St. Jude, I'm a micro philanthropist. People think, oh, Bill Gates. No, I'm a philanthropist. Erin is a philanthropist. Whatever we are doing in our small way, so M is for micro philanthropist. The S is something I'm sure you talk a lot on your own life, is showing up, Erin. I have seen again and again, there's no money involved. Just show up. Show up for your neighbor. Show up for your friend when they need you. Of course, I cannot show up for hundreds of people, but at least some people will know that if they call Neil, I will be there no matter what time of the day, no matter what the reason is. And the last is, which we talked about, start small. Don't have to. That I'm a big believer of coming back to this basic, start small. So I kind of say, okay, if you remember that, that's a good way to, summarize something that you want to do, be an engaged citizen.
That's some gems I can get behind. Okay. Some gems. Okay. I love it. I love it. And I think a lot of people here listening, I know from the PEEPS community, we have so many people who want to be active citizens, who care deeply about their world. Now, even just, you know, we're thinking world, community, let's boil it down to even the leader listening right now. They could apply this same methodology to their team today. Get involved. Empower. Micro philanthropy.
Start small.
Like you can literally apply all of this. Start small. You can start small today. You can literally get engaged today. You can empower somebody on your team today. Literally, I think back to what you said earlier is like, okay, do you want to feel good? Do you want to have purpose? Help someone. Empower someone. I think what you're taking and you're putting, like you're, if we're looking at it from a macro scale, we can micro philanthropy it down to the people on our team. Even if you don't lead a team, you can still engage and empower somebody who is your peer, who is somebody who is sitting next to you on the office cube. Like it doesn't have to be this big step. These small steps matter and people remember people who show up for them. Truly. I'll just share a side story on that. Oh, go ahead, Neil, you go. You got something, you go. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say that since you're on a roll, I will give you, if you drill down one more on the exactly what you just said from a very specific individual perspective, you know, thank a colleague.
Yeah.
Share a credit, something happened. Make space for a voice that you don't speak too much in the meeting. So these are very small things that, you know, so that it's tangible, so that it's not very, you know, conversation. I don't know what to do with this conversation. So these are very specific things that we can do right away.
Right. So specific. And these are small things that are all of the things that you mentioned don't cost money, by the way. They're free.
Being free.
They literally are free. Getting engaged, again, is not a ring. It's just showing up. Just one of the S's. You know, I'm talking about it from a big scale, community, world. We boiled it down to team and leader. Think about your neighbors, right? Like this same methodology is literally applied in every setting of our lives. But it made me think of a story with a neighbor of mine. Unfortunately, she has 4 children, an amazing husband, and her husband was killed in a freak boating accident, just crazy freak accident. I have never seen, I will say that theory, the GEMSS, like everybody was engaged in our neighborhood. Our neighborhood is called The Village, and it really is. And I will say the next step, like empowered, we all showed up for even now today, a year and a half later, for every one of her child's birthdays, we pull money and we get one of those yard signs that says happy birthday to her kids. The M, micro philanthropy. I mean, we're constantly doing fundraisers to help just pay for the kids and help her and support her. And then we show up, like, and she remembers that, right? Like, she remembers that. What's that last S one more time? What's the last S, Neil?
Start small.
Yeah. And all of that, you know, it all started with, like, us starting small with a meal train the day that the accident happened. And she had meals on her table for literally 2 months, you know, and somebody just started that by creating the link. So I just think about, you know, the power of that gems movement. And, you know, I know she's still kind of grieving and it's been almost 2 years, but or a year and a half, I should say, but still she remembers how this community has stood by her. And it was empowering for me to witness and feel like so grateful that these are the people that I can turn to any day.
So now, deeper into this, Erin, and if I can ask you a little tricky question, but feel free to answer it or not, when you helped her, you did not ask her what religion she is. You did not ask her how she looked. You did not ask her any of those stuff. So that if you drill down to this conversation you just had, or you just shared with me, which I talk about also in a very similar context, is what's happened to our country as we speak. And I am spending a lot of time in this. And one of the things I talk about, that if we, you know, how we look, what religion we practice, or whatever the case might be, if we put that aside and think about, we both love our country. We both love our family. We both love our neighbors. And focus on those three pillars we just talked about, you will automatically come to the conclusion that unity does not require uniformity. It requires a common shared commitment to do good. And if we can multiply this conversation, I think we can reduce dramatically the negative environment that is, you know, really not helping our country at this moment. So I'm spending a lot of time in that conversation.
Neil, I'm so here for it. I mean, I'm like 1,000% here for it. You and I, you know, we're recording this way before the show airs. Okay. So there was an incident today in the news that you and I talked about before. And you know, I won't get too far in the weeds on that, but it's shaking. It's startling. It's sad. I want to say I was surprised, but unfortunately, like, I'm not, you know, it's heartbreaking. How can we have these conversations? Because, you know, when we think about workday playdate, right? My peeps, we got all different types of people from all various backgrounds, all different religions, all different political beliefs, many different people coming from all walks of life.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How do we start these conversations at work? Like, how can I turn? And I, you know, I got a very empathetic team. And I feel like we have some really hard conversations together. For the person who keeps work super surface level, like, what's an easy way to just let people know, like, I see you, I got you?
Yeah, as you may all know, other than the book I write, two of my pieces just came out, one actually last week, I think, and Fast Company, the one a month before at CEO World. The Fast Company one, I talked about how CEO, but it doesn't have to be CEO, can be any leader or any leader's position, can be transparent without alienating some people. And there's always that risk when you're taking, when you try to be transparent. It's a part of life, part of leading an authentic life, I call. Leading authentic life has a price. So I talk about five things in that article at Fast Company. I talked about focus on values, not politics, as much as you can. Number two, I talked about tie as much as you can your belief system with the mission, because that gives you a guard. Because if you're tying your value to the company mission statement, then it's a pretty, you can talk a lot, you can do a lot, but make sure that is stay on the forefront, because I think you can defend what you're saying and what you're doing. I talk a lot about consistency, because I think employees, you know, one thing they cannot handle, inconsistency in the leadership. So be consistent, whatever you're saying. And if you're not consistent, explain why you shifted your position. There's always a reason, maybe a good reason. Explain that. Number four is extremely important for me, and I've spent a lot of time on this, is we just talked about it. Respect disagreement and invite dialogue. You know, I actually go farther. I say disagreement is healthy. Mm-hmm. It creates innovation.
That's right.
It creates innovation. And number five, I say be strategic. So yeah, I mean, those are the things I talk to the leaders, that what do we do to be authentic, be transparent, but not alienating a whole lot of people in the process.
I would send me that article, Neil. We'll put it in the show notes for the peeps to review too. And, you know, feel called in my lifetime, just going to get real philosophical here, I feel very called in my lifetime to be a person who cares about other people, who gives empathy to other people, who almost to a fault, Neil. Okay. Like, this is what I want to talk about with you too when it comes to imperfect leadership. Leaders don't have to look perfect. Now, let me take two steps back because I kind of jumped ahead. As a leader, all I want to do is give to my team. Sometimes that giving and pleasing comes at a fault. So I'd love you to talk to that. Like, how do we as leaders who are empaths give, but also like know when to sort of stop getting on the other person's line, so to speak, and stay in our own alignment. Yep. So let's start there. And then I'll go to my second question, because I feel like a lot of people who listen to this show, who, you know, as you know, with the podcast, you don't know everyone, but the people who I hear from, we're all struggling with caring and caring a lot. I don't think that the peeps don't care. I know we care. I think it happens where we care too much, and then it really starts affecting our mental health. And then we feel like we have to show up in this perfect way, and that affects our mental health. So like, can you start with the first piece? This is like twofold. Number one, for the empaths, the leaders who are the caring, giving, nurturing ones, how do we care without overgiving, or and how can we care with boundaries? How can we do that?
I'll answer that, but let me, I'm going to read something, because this is one of the things I wanted to be a base of the book, and what the way you're handling this podcast, I think is relevant. So everybody read the book, not everybody, but most people read the book, you know, by Viktor Frankl called Man's Search for Meaning. Of course, he was in Holocaust survivor. But the Harold Kushner said it best in the foreword of Man's Search of Meaning, a book by Viktor Frankl. This is what he said. Life is not primarily a quest for pleasure, as Freud believed, or a quest for power, as Alfred Adler taught, but a quest for meaning. The greatest task for any person is to find meaning in his or her life, right? Which you just talked about, what drives you. And I think you can feel it drives me, a meaning. That's what keeps me doing what I do, gives me purpose in what I do. And that brings back to the question of purpose anchors our decision and prevents burnout. If you have a purpose, whatever decision we make based on that purpose, it prevents burnout. And because of the purpose, what you just said, you care too much, you do too much sometime and pull back, you're driven by that purpose. It's whether you do it consciously or subconsciously. That's what's driving you.
Yeah.
There's no question about it. No question about it. And empathy is not just about understanding, but seeing through somebody else's before making a judgment. Sometimes people get confused what is empathy is. It is really trying to not just understanding, but seeing a particular issue from somebody else's lens before you make a judgment. Now, coming back to your very difficult question, which I may not have an answer, a good answer, I would say, that what is a line? And that is the line of, burnout line, because if you're caring constantly, because you cannot care for others unless you're caring for yourself. And I think there are gazillion books about it, gazillion podcasts about it, gazillion shows about it. So I think I make it a point, and I will give you one more data on this. Purpose doesn't scream. It whispers. So for me, even to listen to purpose, I need quiet space. I have my way of doing it is I turn things off. I go for a walk. Every year I go for a retreat or some yoga place or somewhere. I'm not saying everybody have to do yoga. That's not the point. The point I'm trying to make is we all have to have a system that allows us to reduce the noise, because the noise is so loud. It's mind-boggling, you know. So I think for us to find that self-healing, you need this quiet space. So I don't have an exact answer, but I think without help, before we help anybody, we have to help ourselves. And that needs self-care.
Yes. Okay. I could not agree more with that. But I also am that leader who extends herself too much. I truly, really wrote the book on it. Did. Got the t-shirt. Did all the things. So that was a really, I know it's a hard question, but it's so, so true.
No, it is relevant. And we have to keep reminding. It's not a hard, easy question. It's a reminder to ourselves. And even if you extrapolate the same question to a broader frame of world, you just talked about a tragic incident happened. You just got the news. I got the news. There's not much you can do about it.
Yeah.
To be very honest with you, right? Let's be very real about it. So what I'm trying to harp on is, instead of feeling helpless in an overall system, whatever, there are 10 things bothers you every day. I'm guessing, Erin. I don't know. Okay. All I'm trying to say, but I honestly believe out of the 10 things, if you and I pick one that I believe I have the skill or I have the money or I have the time to take one action, that I'm going to do that.
That's right.
Knowing fully well, then other 9, I just have to find a way to live with it.
That's
and
right.
Do what I can.
And it goes back to your GEMS model, which I like, because you can get engaged. You can find one tiny way to get engaged. You can find one tiny way to empower somebody else. Like, and then go through the whole list of your GEMS model. I do love that. Okay. I got to go back to this imperfection because, you know, you got to teach what you need to know, Neil. And so here's a question for you. For the leader who wants to create this conversation, have these important conversations with their team, but they feel like they're afraid to do it because they're going to mess up, what would you say to that person? The recovering perfectionist, if you will. Maybe they've been triggered by a conversation they've had in the past where they did mess up.
Right. It brings back to, I have to go back to the same article again, because there are two things I wrote. One was specifically try to answer the question you just raised, that how do leaders, and because the original article I wrote, I think a couple of months ago, the young generation, the so-called, I did some survey. I talked to a lot of younger people in the last several months to understand where they stand. They are very different than some of us are at this age. I think they want to ask a lot more questions. They want to know a lot more what's happening. A lot of them feel they have the right to express their opinion at a workplace, whatever their opinion might be. So that was one piece I wrote before. And then I went on to write this one, where I talked about how do leaders handle that in a broader spectrum. And I kind of give you some of the And I'm happy to share that with you, an article, and you can share that. But I think, as I said, I'll have to repeat, because you have to focus on values, not politics, because then I think you are sticking to something that you feel you can be, whatever you're saying, people will not put in a box. That's what the danger is. Anytime you put people in a box, oh, okay, he or she's saying this because he or she identified with this particular political belief. And then I kind of, if I'm not into that box, then I automatically say, oh, I'm not going to hear it. So I think that's what I try, and I keep the word try because it's, you know, there's always a better way. I will refer back to that article and Fast Company. I'm happy to share that with you, the things I kind of said. This is more relevant to maybe mid-sized large companies, that you have to kind of elevate your CSR beyond compliance and beyond charity. You have to take it to, I call it CSR 5.0. You have to prioritize your employees' well-being and inclusiveness. It doesn't matter what you call them, because labeling becomes a thing these days. Everybody, there's enough data to show inclusive team produces much more results than anybody else. These are just numbers and facts. So these are for profitability.
Yes.
I think there was a study done in 2025 where it showed, it's called the Zipdo study. Investor survey, it tells you that 78% of investors consider CSR report a key factor when evaluating companies. So data are there. So I think there are, from a more leadership perspective, those are the things I would recommend. You know, rethink your supply chain, invest in local talent, et cetera, et cetera.
I love it. Okay. Why would you say that imperfect leaders make the biggest difference? What would you say to that question? Why do that statement? Why do imperfect leaders make the biggest difference?
Well, number one, what's coming to my mind by the basic fact, even Dalai Lama is kind of interesting. He keeps talking about imperfection a lot in his discussion, and he repeats itself that we are all very imperfect human being, including himself. And if you look at my book, in the introduction of the book, I specifically mentioned all the leaders I profiled, from Bill Clinton to John McCain to Mother Teresa to Dalai Lama. I specifically said all of them are imperfect, but my book kind of acknowledged that at the beginning. So coming back to your conversation on imperfection, it makes great leader because we are aware of our imperfection. Awareness is a big thing, because we are aware our shortfalls are, because we are aware that we can improve, because we are aware that we have work to do. I think that's what makes great leader.
Oh my God, I love it. Our work is never done. We're on Earth School for a reason, to be here to learn the lessons, and if we're lucky, teach them. So I love your teaching, Sunil. I'm so grateful. You brought your purpose full circle to the show. I have one final question for you today, and I ask everybody. Neil Ghosh, how are you going to make your workday more playful today?
Okay. I'm actually meeting one of my former colleagues for drink, because he doesn't have a job anymore because of the change in the government. I'm taking out to a drink at 6 o'clock.
Yeah. Okay. What are you going to get? What's your drink of choice?
Oh, God. This is a boring one, unfortunately. This is a very boring drink. I usually drink at 6 o'clock. I will have a glass of Cabernet. That's kind of my drink to go most of the time. I'm a red wine guy.
So good, though. So nice. I love a nice cab. Okay. I'm a cab from Sonoma type gal. I like Sonoma cabs. I don't know. Just got my favorite one, Sebastiani. Anyway, Neil, thank you for being on this show. Thank you for bringing in your purpose. Thank you for bringing your light. And I'm so excited we got to meet. I'm here for your work. Everybody, go grab a copy of Do More Good. Tell everyone where they can find you, Neil, before we head out.
Oh, it's very easy. It's on Amazon. I can Google my name and the book, or you can go to my website, which is Neil, NeilGhosh.org.
Love it. Neil, thank you so much for being a part of this play date. I had so much fun, learned so much. We'll have you back. Thank you, Neil.
Thank you, Erin. Bye-bye.
Neil, thank you so much for dropping all the wisdom bombs and reminding us that our cracks are actually where the light gets in. I loved this conversation with Neil. I love the work he is doing in the world. So here's your homework for the week. I want you to take action. Do something small, as Neil says. And I want you to do it with imperfection in mind. I don't want you to think about doing it and doing it perfectly. I want you to have, how can I just get out there and start small and do this one thing that is going to empower myself, my team, or someone I know in my community today? How can I start small, and how can I do it perfectly imperfect? That's your homework. And watch what happens. You're going to, just spoiler alert, have some trust and connection go through the roof. That's it for today, my peeps, here on Workday Playdate. Now I want you to get out there, lead imperfectly, and I will see you next time.